Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
It's good to be back. Welcome into Bet the Board podcast powered by Bet Online on Thursday, September 29th. Action-packed show for you. Of course, as we always do on Thursday, talking the big game tonight, if you want to call it that, between the Bengals and Dolphins. We'll get Payne Insider's thoughts, not only on the Monday night game, but all the marquee matchups coming up this weekend. Bring in Dave Mason to talk about how the house fared last weekend, even delve into some debate stuff, and of course, fill you in on where you can get all your Bet the Board swag and support the show. But before we do that, I want to welcome in my esteemed co-host, the incomparable Payne Insider. Of course, you can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. And Payne, always a pleasure to be back with you in the morning.
Absolutely. The Big Thursday podcast. Hopefully we will give out some information that will lead to a few winners for our loyal listeners.
You know, got to capitalize on some of that momentum from Monday. I know when we broke down that Falcons-Saints game, we talked about it like the market wouldn't budge off 2.5. Hopefully a lot of our listeners were able to latch on, grab the 3, and coast to a relatively easy victory down there in the Big Easy.
Yeah, I think there was kind of some misunderstandings, too, when I said not a big stance. You know, that's kind of some gambling verbiage, I guess, that, you know, some may not have understood. We were clearly on the Falcons. The question was, how big was your position? And that's kind of part two into the equation of finding winners. And, you know, for the loyal listeners, they kind of have heard me say this a lot over the course of time. Finding a winner is part one. Determining your edge on that game is part two. And once you're able to decipher that edge, because all games are not equal, you kind of have to figure out your bet sizing. Is this going to be one position? Is it going to be two positions? Is it going to be three positions? And once it came off that three, again, the three is a little bit devalued, especially in a game with a total that high, the stance, the position size wasn't as big as it was on the Falcons. It was just a regular bet.
And while that game worked out well for us, judging by Dave Mason's timeline the morning after the game, it'll be interesting to get his take. I'm not sure they fared so well on the total with some rebet functionality that I'm sure Dave will hit on in a little bit greater detail. But, Payne, we know where folks can find you on Twitter. They can find me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. Of course, they can follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod, for all official updates, news, and a lot of humorous sports gambling content. But what's the URL for the site, and what can they expect in the swag and gear department?
Yeah, absolutely. We kind of built a fancy new website for you guys to keep everything archived in one section, bettheboardpodcast.com. Go there. The most recent podcast will be smack in the middle on the homepage, but all our other podcasts as well. So those will be archived on there. Todd, I know you've got some great content up there, so there's some gambling blogs. And then we added a little swag section. There's lots and lots of gambling t-shirts up there. Some movie themed. Obviously, we have Monday movie review, so some of those are movie themed, but lots of great gambling swag you can wear to the sports book. You can wear in the man cave as you're cheering home your bets. Whatever your choice of wearing the t-shirt may be, all the swag's there for you.
And you mentioned some of that content posted earlier this week. An interesting piece and a little bit more in-depth than for the casual reader, talking about the integrity of sports betting, courtesy of the American Gaming Association, who brings you the big game breakdown every Monday and Thursday. Encourage folks to check that out. And now we welcome in the aforementioned Dave Mason on Bet Online. As always, you can follow Dave on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, before we get into some of the football for the weekend, I know you guys hung a bevy, a laundry list, so to speak, of debate props. How'd that action look Monday night, since we know it captivated the attention of the entire nation with over 100 million people tuning in?
Hey, Todd and Payne. The action was great on the debate props. As you said, we had a ton. I think we had 20 to 30 props listed. The action was great, and we actually did pretty good on it, except for one. I mean, we got buried on the color of the tie. I mean, Trump always has this red tie on, so we opened We just opened red or field, and we opened a field at like plus 800. And everybody took that long odds, and it actually ended up closing down, I think, like plus 240. And we kind of screwed up on that, too. We left it open a little bit too long, and sure enough, they had a shot of Trump getting out of his limo or whatever in a blue tie. And we still had the odds open, so we got, you know, we had a flurry of bets coming in, and we closed it then, but it was too late. So we gave out a lot of money on that blue tie. So
it makes things a little bit tricky when that's the case. He did wear his red tie the next day when he did a Florida roundtable, but probably about 24 hours too late for all you guys at BetOnline.
Yeah, he always has that red tie on, man. But a couple interesting things from takeaways from it. Since, you know, we closed the odds for the presidential odds during the debate, but after we opened them, a little bit more action on Clinton. There's like 55% of the bets so far have been on Clinton. But the thing is, the bet size, about four times greater on Clinton bets than Trump bets. So what's that tell you? I don't know, but... just an interesting trend there of what we're seeing.
Yeah, it may be interesting to see that unfold. It depends what media outlet you look at. You see some saying one candidate wins, some saying the other. Of course, we'll know for certain on election day, about 6 weeks away. Last weekend, Dave, I wanted to get your thoughts, though, pro and college. How did the weekend work out? And specifically when you look at college, we know the Stanford-UCLA game couldn't have been good for the house. But I have to imagine anything that you guys lost on Saturday, you got back on Sunday and then some, with Buffalo covering and winning outright against Arizona. And then, of course, the big afternoon game, your beloved Philadelphia Eagles curb stomping the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, college, actually, I was shocked. We didn't lose on college. We actually won a little bit. It was pretty choppy, but we ended up winning a little bit. Florida State killed us early, and that Stanford was a kick in the nuts, man. We were buried on Stanford money. We were big UCLA fans, but that totally killed us. But yeah, I mean, Saturday was like, it was one of those things where you didn't really win, but you thought you got crushed, so it wasn't too bad. NFL on Sunday was, I mean, there's really no complaints. The games you mentioned, Bills, Eagles, Rams was huge, Redskins, the players won on the Packers. And the players won the night game pretty big at Cowboys. They were everybody's been the Cowboys. So Sunday was really good for the house, a real good day. The Monday night game now, we won on the spread, but, I mean, we got killed on the over. It was the biggest over or a game total loss regular season in the history of the company. But that had a lot to do with one guy. We had one guy who bet the over five times for about $15,000 to win $15,000. So in the day he was exposed about $100,000 to win about $72,000, I think. And of course he overcovered with ease. It wasn't even a sweat for the guys, and wasn't a sweat for us either, because it was freaking over in the third quarter. But yeah, he buried us on the over, and I posted the bet tickets on those five bets on my Twitter account at Dave Mason DOL. So head over there and check it out. So yeah, that was a burial, but it was pretty much from one dude on Monday night.
It's amazing what one guy can do. How's the NFL action looking for this coming weekend, including tonight's game between the Bengals and Miami Dolphins?
Well, it looks like we're going to have some big exposures here again. We'll be Miami fans tonight. 73% of the action is on the Bengals. Sunday, we got some big one-sided decisions so far. I mean, these numbers will come down a little bit, but as an early indication, we're going to have some sweats here. Broncos minus 3 at Bucks. 84% of the action is on the Broncos. 81% of the action is on the Cowboys minus 2.5. At the Niners, and 88% of the action on the line is Lions minus 3 at Bears. That road chalk, man, they love that road chalk. So we're usually rooting for the home dogs, and they'll definitely be on Sunday as well. As far
any,
as sharp action goes, yep, sharp.
No, you read my mind.
Sharp action, Bengals tonight minus 6.5 and minus 7. That's currently minus 7.5. Falcons plus 3.5. That's a plus 3. Here's some college, ton of college. I'll just roll off a few. Old Dominion minus 8, UTEP plus 20, Miami, Florida minus 6.5, and Oklahoma minus 2 is big sharp.
And Dave, and thanks as always for sharing some of that great information. What kind of promotions can the bettors expect this weekend? They need to stock their account, or they just want to get in on the action, have a chance to bet into those college football openers on Sunday afternoon.
Yes, sir. We have a good bonus out there for your listeners. If you're a first timer, if you do not have a BetOnline account, go over there and sign up for one at BetOnline.ag. Use promo code 75BTB, that's 75BTB for a first-time welcome bonus of 75%. If you already have a BetOnline account, use promo code 50BTB for a 50% one-time bonus. All the terms and conditions and information can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Always a pleasure, Dave. Thanks for the great information, and best of luck to you and the rest of the guys at the shop this weekend.
All right, fellas. Have a great weekend. Talk to you next week.
Payne, always interesting to get Dave's thoughts, and as I figured he would, talking about the Atlanta Falcons total, which clearly didn't work out the way they drew it up. When you have one player coming in five times betting 15 dimes a pop, it probably hurts your balance sheet on a standalone football game.
Yeah, absolutely, and not just the sharp action where money can quickly accumulate, but I would anticipate in a game like that the public was on the over as well, so it becomes not just a left jab, but a right hook as well.
And, of course, he mentions the Broncos, Cowboys, and Lions having a substantial amount of public liability. Lions, Bears not going to get top billing on this podcast by any stretch. I know we'll have some pretty poignant thoughts on the Broncos and Cowboys, which we'll get to shortly. But before we get into some of the individual matchups for this weekend, I want to talk about some of the injuries. And we've seen probably the biggest injury from last weekend. No, it's not the Giants losing Shane Vereen for the season. But what took place in Houston? J.J. Watt appears out for the year, being placed on IR with his back injury coming back to haunt him. And you've seen some major line movement on that particular game. I'm not as worried about their matchup this week for the Texans with the Titans, but how does that change the way we should approach the Texans and handicap their games moving forward?
Yeah, we kind of talked about this last week in regards to the Bears, and we've now reached a point with gambling analysis where it's like the cool thing to say, this injury doesn't matter. This injury is irrelevant. Nope, nothing to the point spread. Nope, doesn't matter. And it's one thing that I'm able to kind of take with a grain of salt. I get both perspectives from the gambling side and then the coaching side as well. In the Bears last week, you're down three guys. Nope, nothing to the spread. It's bullshit. You lose a stout defensive tackle against the run. You lose an edge rusher. You lose your middle linebacker, your heart, your signal caller. It's a cumulative effect. In terms of J.J. Watt, though, the player grade efficiency that he's had so far this year, it's bad. It's very bad. He is a below average football player in terms of what he's produced the first three games of this season because he is not fully healthy. So if you're gauging things on the first three games played by J.J. Watt this year, whoever replaces him is going to actually be an upgrade.
And I ask you this question because we've seen the number move at BetOnline from 6.5 where it opened down to 4.5. You talk about his inefficiency. Is J.J. Watt, the way he had performed through the first three games, a two-point player at this day and age of 2016?
No, absolutely not. He wasn't a two-point player in his prime. He wasn't a two-point player ever. And again, absolutely not this season. He's actually been one of the worst interior linemen this season because he's playing with injury. And I keep preferencing that because obviously he's a fantastic player. Your back is your entire body. Why he tried coming back early, not 100% with that back injury, a little bit beyond me, especially when you look at the rest of that division and your aspirations are playoffs and beyond. So it was very interesting rushing him back. Now it looks like he could be lost for the season. But in perspective of what he provided the first three games of this season, the replacement player is likely an upgrade.
Now, the other player that I want to hit on, Dez Bryant, I think we'll hold off on that. We'll get to it when we break down the Cowboys and Niners. I know that's a game that's caught the attention of a lot of folks out there. Maybe a potential distraction when you talk about Dez being diagnosed with a hairline fracture in the knee. But before, again, when we get into the actual games, Jacksonville and Indianapolis, we know the Jaguars are very familiar with going across the pond, you know, each and every year to play a game in London. Is there a different thought process that goes into handicapping games in London? You saw through social media and a lot of prominent journalists talking about the trends to try and fade teams the week before they go to London. Last week, of course, Indianapolis steals a win against the Chargers, and Jacksonville lets one slip through their fingers against the Ravens.
Yeah, absolutely, but it's a short sample size, so using any of the London trends at this point, I'm not sure it's the best way to attack a game. Obviously, you get that vacation mentality. We didn't think that was the case when you look at the Colts last week or the Jaguars last week. Those were kind of must-win games. The Colts win the game. The Jaguars absolutely were in position to win that game. You know, came up short because, you know, they're a dysfunctional organization, not because of the London trip. So that's one thing. In terms of the actual London trip, you want to absolutely check on the field. Usually they like to grow the grass a little bit, makes for a slower playing surface. We've dealt with weather over the course of time in these London games. And then obviously not being acclimated to your surroundings, changing up your schedule. These players are very regimented. They have been since high school, since college, in the NFL. This is the time we practice. This is the time we wake up. This is the time our games are. So when you kind of distort that a little bit, things can change. The 9:30 start time is definitely something you want to consider as well.
And when we talk about this, you mentioned the 9:30 start time. Of course, this will be a standalone game of very different variety. Folks will have a chance on the East Coast to watch this in isolated coverage. The same luxury we'll have here on the West Coast with real breakfast football, 6:30 local time. You've seen this number move a ton, Payne, and want to try and get your thoughts there. BetOnline actually used Jacksonville as a 2.5-point favorite on the open. We've seen that number swing all the way to Indianapolis, a 2.5-point chalk. A little bit of money on the under from 49.5 down to 48.5. Is a 5-point move with these two teams really warranted, or do we think this is kind of where the market maybe should have opened initially?
Yeah, I think this is probably a decent starting point of where we thought this would open. You know, this right now is a game that I don't have a ton of interest in. Obviously, this is a market. It moves by the minute. Over the next 72 hours, we'll gain a lot of information, form new opinions, and maybe even change an opinion or two. It's a market. You kind of have to adapt or die. Gus Bradley needs this game like blood. We've seen there's been a few coaches fired after slow starts in a loss in London over the years. So you know, neither of these teams are very good, but getting a win like Indy got last week, the Jaguars losing a game like they did last week, the confidence for both these teams looks like it's in opposite directions. And I think one thing, when you look at the capping angle of this game, you kind of have to make a slight adjustment to the Colts in terms of their defense. Antonio Cromartie, they signed him off the streets. It's been a pleasant surprise. Through 3 weeks, he's filled in very well. He's an above-average corner. Vontae Davis returned last week. It allows Adams to go back to his position where he went to a Pro Bowl. Patrick Robinson returned to practice this week. I'd assume he gets cleared from the concussion. 2 days ago, Darius Butler doing some side work with the hamstring. Not sure he goes this week, but his return looks near. So suddenly this horrific secondary is getting a bunch of pieces back, and you have to kind of upgrade that defensive touch. And if you look at what they did last week, they gave up 5 trips inside the 25, just gave up 1 touchdown. They got a turnover. The other 3 trips, they allow field goals. So I think you have to upgrade that Colts defense just a touch. It's not going to be anything to write home to mom about, but it's going to go from one of the worst units to potentially vying for that average type defense.
And we know Antonio Cromartie will do everything he can to defy father time to keep food on the table for his 42 children. So Crow will be out there any which way. Interesting you mentioned their ability to bend but don't break against the Chargers. Wanted to use that as the closing point in this particular game. Even if we upgrade the Colts, do we give them credit for that, or do we think that had something to do with San Diego just not having playmakers to get into the end zone inside the 20?
Yeah, certainly it helped. It helps not having to face, you know, the Danny Woodheads, a lot of the you know, Antonio Gates, those kind of guys. Clearly that helps. There's zero doubt about that.
You know what will help the New York Jets this weekend? Not having to face Russell Wilson at 100%. We know Pete Carroll has come out and said, oh, we expect our quarterback to be a full go. But a knee sprain, a bum ankle, you have to give Wilson credit. He's fought through adversity, hasn't missed a game during his NFL career. But Seattle flies across the country, laying 2.5 points on the road. Total in this game, 40. We saw the Jets at their absolute worst on the offensive side. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 6 interceptions, only lost 24-3. And I say only 24-3 because the defense gave up, if you want to give them credit for it, 10 points with 2 defensive scores there. Where do we begin to handicap the Seahawks flying across the country against a Jets team looking to get a bad taste out of their mouth?
I think it's the one angle you try to attack when you attempt to fade the Seattle Seahawks, and it's the offensive line. So right now, 29th in overall efficiency for that offensive line. On the flip side, you have a Jets defensive line that's third overall in efficiency. They get after the quarterback, number five in adjusted sack rate. And so this matchup was the reason we saw and have seen the Seahawks struggle with the Rams of all teams. You get that dominant defensive front, and it's given this Ram team's fits over the year. The Jets need this game like blood. Right now, Russ is dealing with that ankle injury. He's dealing with the knee injury now. Very weird how they're kind of talking about it all week, like everything is, you know, ice cream sundaes. It's very weird. I'm not sure he's going to be 100%. We saw what this offense looks like with him having limited mobility. In terms of value, I kind of made this line a pick 'em when you factor in all the angles and the situation. Seattle wins by, you know, about 20 last week. Jets lose by about 20. Fitzpatrick has 6 interceptions. And the market reacts, and suddenly this game opens 3 instead of 1. And I think that's the kind of value you're looking for, you know, when you enter any market.
And you talk about this, and I can't believe I'm actually going to ask this question, but feel it needs to be done. We know the number will move if Russell Wilson is downgraded. How far it'll go and what odds makers feel he's worth the number remains to be seen. But if you're holding a ticket on the Jets or you're looking to bet them, do you want Russell Wilson in there operating at, say, 60% rather than Trevon Boykin at full speed, considering the Jets won't really know how that offense will look with Boykin taking the snaps?
Yeah, I'm not sure what Trevon Boykin is. I think that'll be a tough, tough situation for him as well. Clearly, he'll be a little more mobile, but what he doesn't possess is, you know, the game acumen, the IQ, the familiarity with his weapons, the familiarity of the offense. So what he gains in mobility, you probably lose a little bit at the other places in that game. So I would much rather have, you know, Trevon Boykin in there rather than Russell Wilson shot up and attempting to play even if he's at 70-75%. But we'll see. I think probably there's value even at the current number, and specifically at 3 when a lot of the sharp guys entered the market.
And one thing we definitely have to figure is that the Jets will look much better in terms of putting a complete effort on the field after how lethargic and sluggish they looked with extra time to prepare for Kansas City a week ago. Carolina didn't think was going to come into this game sitting at 1-2, and they go on the road to take on division rival Atlanta. You're looking at Carolina, a 3-point favorite. You do have to lay $1.20 right now at BetOnline. Total on the game at 50. Atlanta, we kind of saw their performance coming against the Saints on Monday night, but I'd be lying to our listeners if you told me going into that game, Atlanta's going to give up 32 points and you're still never going to have to sweat a Falcons cover.
I think one thing when you look at this game is the Panthers coming off an embarrassing loss at home. They don't score a single point the last 49 minutes of that game. You do have a little revenge on the mind of the Panthers. You know, they came into Atlanta a season ago, perfect record intact, and they leave with a blemish. It's a short week for Atlanta. I think when you kind of look at things in terms of this game, not so much in love with a side. I think the total presents a little bit more value. We've talked about this Carolina defense. I know the yards per play numbers are still stout. They're still there, but they've given up some points here. You give up 14 points in the second half alone to Minnesota. The Vikings hang 27 on you. I know the Broncos didn't, you know, move the ball up and down the field, only had about 300 yards of offense week one, but they score 21, and there was 2 red zone turnovers there. So the defense, not quite up to snub. The offense, though, I think we'll have some success against this Falcons team. We've seen the Falcons offense with this two-headed monster at tailback is really improving things. Now, I know it was the Saints defense, but you hang 40-plus points, and Julio Jones has one catch. There's a lot of other dynamic weapons here in this offense. So I think we'll see a lot of points in this game.
And we look at the Falcons. Mohamed Sanu was a bit nicked up Monday night. Expect him to be a full go for this matchup?
I don't think it really matters. I mean, he's pretty irrelevant to the spread. I think Hardy will fill in that role just fine if need be. And then obviously right now, the key here is being able to keep Ryan upright against that defense. He gets pressure. He gets the happy feet, starts throwing balls left and right. So the key here will be, you know, keeping the pressure off of Ryan.
And you mentioned that Carolina defense. Yes, they came up on the short end of the stick against Minnesota. Pretty impressive to hold the Vikings to about 200 yards, but field position has not played into the Panthers' favor, something that we harped on all last year, saying they were extremely fortunate. And it is simply amazing in the NFL when you see regression coming to bear its ugly head. be interesting. You know, you mentioned Carolina, I don't think ever envisioned a chance where they could be 1-3 in the division, chasing two games behind the Falcons. But as we've seen, Atlanta is a team more than capable of coming back to earth against a good defensive front. Broncos in Tampa, you know, Mason hit on this campaign. He said this is probably going to be one of the house's biggest decisions. Denver makes their second trip in as many weeks to the Eastern time zone. They did fly back home after taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. And when you look at Tampa, they were anything but impressive, losing 37-32 to the Rams, a game that was delayed about 2 hours and with 2 minutes to go in the game, given some of the weather there. And Tampa, all of a sudden, from the talk of the town, beating Atlanta 31-24 in the opener to two clunkers in back-to-back weeks. Can the Bucs get on track, and do they make sense as a home underdog against the suddenly dominant Denver Broncos and Trevor Siemian's newfound adept passing touch?
Yeah, Dirk Koetter, you know, new head coach, still have Jameis Winston, very young QB. We're kind of seeing the growing pains of that the last few weeks, and unfortunately, those growing pains have come against much stiffer opponents defensively than they saw week one in Atlanta. One thing that you really have to focus on here is they don't really have a ground game right now at this point without Doug Martin. As nice as Charles Sims is, I was high on him in terms of fantasy value coming into the season. He's really not a between-the-tackles type runner. He's more of your pass-catching variety. So they really miss Doug Martin in this offense. It really becomes one-dimensional. So that's what scares me a bit here. Obviously, the Broncos look like $1 million. They traveled home. They're going back to the East Coast here. I think you'll probably see an appetite for the dog. I'm sure there's a lot of guys that would love to get the hook there. But for me right now at the current price, not much.
All right, let's give you the clipboard. We'll give you the headset. You get to fill in as Coach Cutter's offensive coordinator for this week. How do you devise a game plan? As you mentioned, no Doug Martin. You can't run the football between the tackles. How do you try and slow down that vaunted Broncos pass rush? Is a lot of screens? Is a lot of short passes? We've seen Jameis Winston almost appear to be a sitting duck in certain scenarios.
Yeah, that's absolutely what you have to do. First of all, you have to have Charles Sims in there chipping on Vaughn. The key here is when you're facing this Broncos defense without DeMarcus Ware, it allows you to cheat a little bit to one side. So that's what you're going to have to do. But yes, if you can't get the ground game going without Doug Martin, you kind of have to create that, I guess, here's my hand, you can't really see it kind of thing. A lot of draw plays, a lot of screen plays, run them right at Von Miller. And you have to have a lot of those short passing variety, kind of implement your running game that way. So that's what Tampa's going to have to do. They need to get Jameis in a rhythm early. We know at Florida State, historically slow starter, they need to build that confidence. Sometimes he gets a little amped early on, throwing balls high. So you really need to get him comfortable early on in this game. It's not a game where you're going to be able to play catch-up and you're one-dimensional against this Broncos defense.
You got to come out there, let Jameis run a little quarterback draw, quarterback read option, take a hit, feel some pain, and hopefully he'll settle in there. I can tell you, though, judging by the conversation we had with Dave earlier, this will put the books in a precarious position if they're not able to get some sharp buyback on the dog here, knowing that the public will probably come in at about an 80% clip. And for those folks familiar with the Sunday tradition of pros versus Joes, I can say with about 99% confidence, the Denver Broncos will make the Joes list this week. Cowboys-Niners, another late game. Dallas, a road favorite. You're looking at the Cowboys, a 2.5-point favorite at BetOnline, that number trending towards 2. You've seen the total tick down a touch from 46 to 45.5. San Francisco, again, they look great on Monday Night Football, have not looked anything close over the last 2 weeks. Falling in games against Carolina by double digits, going up to Seattle and getting absolutely boat raced. The Boo Birds are starting to come out, asking for Colin Kaepernick, maybe to be the guy taking snaps under center. Dallas, they haven't played a living, breathing defense. I don't feel pain, obviously, that San Francisco would qualify as one of those. But what do you make of this Dez Bryant distraction? Hairline fracture in the knee, fined for missing his MRI, clearly a key cog in the offense capable of stretching the field and giving Dak Prescott a weapon he so desperately needs.
Yeah, the Dez injury seriously hurts them. There's no doubt about that. We'll see how things play out offensively from that perspective. I think in terms of, you know, you mentioned Boo Birds for the 49ers. I'm not quite sure what they expected going on the road to Carolina as nearly a 2-touchdown dog, going back on the road to Seattle as a double-digit dog. I'm not sure what they were kind of thinking there in terms of potentially getting wins, but the competition decreases significantly. You're back home here as fast as the 49ers are playing offensively early on, the defense has not worn down and they're playing very well, actually top 10 overall in defensive efficiency on that side of the ball. And they've done a decent job stopping the run, and that's going to be the key here. If Dez is officially ruled out, you're going to have to stop Zeke. You're going to have to stop Dak on the ground. And if you can do that, I think there's going to be some success here for the 49ers. That is professional money. Early on, the dog took 3. It's now trending down, and I would probably expect this to trend down a little bit more.
And you mentioned the defense. Of course, the marquee matchup, in my opinion, to watch, and also from a handicapping perspective, quite obviously. How do you have the San Francisco defensive line grading out against Dallas's strength with just that fortress offensive line? We saw Ezekiel Elliott start to show flashes of brilliance against the Bears. Can he continue that this week when they travel out west?
Well, I think every single week when you look at the Cowboys, it goes by their offensive line. That's the key to this entire team. Can you run the ball? Can you be efficient? Can you grind out the clock? Not only is it a key to your offense, but that's the key to your defense. So every single week, this offensive line puts the onus on their shoulders for this Cowboys team to be successful. The 49ers, as I kind of alluded to earlier, the defense has been very efficient so far, especially being on the field a lot. They haven't worn down. It's early in the season. That could clearly change. But right now, they're in the top half of the NFL in terms of yards per carried allowed per rush.
And when you mentioned top offenses and struggling defense, may as well shift gears to yet another late game. New Orleans in a short week traveling out west to take on the Chargers. We can make the case that the Chargers should be 3-0 if it wasn't for some unfortunate breaks late in games and their inability to hold leads. Unfortunately, you are what your record says you are. And for the Chargers, it's 1-2. Look at their number here. They're a 4-point favorite against the Saints. Total in this game, 53.5. This one should be one of the more exciting late games when you talk about points and big play potential for both of these teams.
Drew Brees, back home after kind of being sent away in 2005. You know this is a game that he's had circled when he saw it on the schedule in the offseason. When you're 0-3 and the market absolutely hates you, there are these little things, the game within the game, so to speak, you try to use to find hidden value. You'll look like crap on national TV. Again, you're 0-3. The market absolutely hates you. I get they're not great away from the dome. This Chargers team, you alluded to it a little bit, could be 3-0, instead 1-2. They blow fourth quarter leads twice. What's the mental state of this team? Not only losing those two heartbreakers, but the injuries, those continue to pile up. Now Manti Te'o out for the season with an Achilles. Aside from the market, injuries is the reason we kind of hate going over win totals. They're based on a lot of these team components, but they're also based on everyone being available, and you're only as good as your depth. This is a San Diego team that doesn't have a ton of that. So this is going to be the key here. The one thing I wanted to look at is the travel. So San Diego traveled to Kansas City, come back home, travel to Indy, come back home. Lots of travel going on early in the schedule for San Diego. Two division games on deck with Oakland and Denver. It will be interesting to see the focus level here of the Chargers. And again, Drew Brees will want this game like blood.
Well, you mentioned season-ending injuries and why it is so difficult to go over win totals. You can handle one of those. You can maybe handle two of them. Now the Chargers already have 3 to key contributors. Puts them clearly behind the eight ball a bit. You mentioned the market and how much disdain they have for New Orleans. What's kind of been the sentiment on the Chargers? Because we saw professional money come in week one against Kansas City, that number 7 to 6.5. Week two, you saw the public back Jacksonville hand over fist, yet that number never really budged off the 3. And then, of course, last week against Indianapolis, you saw that number move as far as the Chargers, a 1-point road favorite against Indy, before it ultimately closed 1.5. Do the professionals start to sour on San Diego despite having been on them each of the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, they've been on them every which way possible, over their win total each of the first 3 weeks. Right now, there's a little, you know, hesitation with them. You're losing a lot of weapons. The optimism coming into the season was huge. This is a team that we thought could win that division. You bring, you know, the familiarity of a, you know, offensive coordinator that has been very successful with the Chargers. He's now without a lot of weapons. We talked about adding McCluster. There just wasn't that rapport there against the Colts. Maybe that changes with some more practice time. You get that scat back out of the backfield. That will help things. But overall, you know, you can't like San Diego as much as we used to. We're certainly not as high on them right now. Just the injury bug has just killed this team year after year. You start to really feel bad for Phillip Rivers.
I mean, it's definitely been tough. His window of opportunity closing, and clearly, as you mentioned, this is a team, such high expectations coming into the season, maybe not amongst the casual fans, but definitely amongst the professional bettors. And an interesting game Sunday night, Payne. You have two teams. I'm not going to say they're trending in different directions, but eye-opening performances on both sides a week ago from Kansas City. Their defense started to show its teeth. Marcus Peters, we know how good he is as a lockdown cover corner, gave them the flexibility to go out there and win comfortably against the Jets. Probably the most surprising result, not only week three, but maybe the entire season. Pittsburgh goes on the road across the state to take on the Eagles. Carson Wentz looks like $1 million, and the Steelers is three and a half point favorites, get absolutely boat race, losing by 30. They come home, play in prime time, 4.5 point favorites against Kansas City. Total on this game, 47.5. The big news here for Pittsburgh, they do get Le'Veon Bell back, but I'll make the case that D'Angelo Williams hasn't exactly been a slouch in Bell's absence thus far.
I know a lot of people, you know, think they're better than they are when it comes to sports betting, and you'll see this from time to time. Man, what were the sports books doing here? Man, what an abysmal line is this? How could you hang this number? And sometimes they make mistakes, but I'm going to say the books did a good job with this total. I had this circled for a bit with the Chiefs' offensive woes. We know how we feel about the Chiefs defensively without Houston providing that pressure. In terms of the market, Pittsburgh, we touched on this last week. They had the rain game, but overall the passing efficiency had not been great. Then you score 3 points last week. I thought we would really see this total open 45, 45 and a half, and we were going to slam it over. Now they open it through the 47. It makes it a much, much tougher task here. I think Pittsburgh, as we alluded to, has had trouble getting after the quarterback. Now, they've been good against the run, but if you can't get pressure, the secondary is a little susceptible. The Chiefs like that dink and dunk passing game, which can frustrate a team that can't get pressure. So this is going to be an interesting one. Le'Veon Bell, as you alluded to, back. Pittsburgh, got to check that injury report. Defensive side of the ball, a couple key guys went out last week in the Philadelphia game. You'll have to monitor that, see if they come back. But over had my attention. I've paused now at 47, 47 and a half a little bit.
Does Jamaal Charles possibly being back in the fold for Kansas City change the handicap at all, or you figure that he's going to have a diminished workload as they try and integrate him back into the flow of things?
Zero.
That's always good to know. And I guess the next question, we've seen some resistance trending. Do we think this number, if you're looking to try and bet Pittsburgh, may actually trend closer to four before it climbs back up into that dead zone of 5.5 before hitting six?
It's getting pretty good two-way action right now. Not really sure where this is going in terms of side. Again, don't really love a side here. The total is really more my focus and would love to see this trend downwards a little bit. Some potential weather in play. Again, this is a week, and every week you should get into the good habits of just checking the weather. I know we're kind of entering the cold parts of the year soon. We're not quite there yet, but you really have to make it a habit to check the weather reports, whether it's rain, whether it's wind. The last thing you want to be doing is going over a total, and all of a sudden you flip on your TV screen, and then there's a 28-mile-an-hour crosswind, and it's pouring rain, and your bet's done, you know, before it even starts. So that's the one key I think you want to check on this game.
I want to ask you one question on weather. I know it's come up before, and there have been some radio personalities that asked me, and I feel a certain way. I think we're on the same page. But something that might be good for our listeners. When you look at wind, what type of wind impacts your total wagering the most? Is it a crosswind? Is it end zone to end zone? Is it certain miles an hour? I don't want you to give away the secret sauce, but for a lot of the newer handicappers out there that who aren't quite sure how to incorporate weather into their handicapping, what do some of the professionals look for in that regard?
Yeah, obviously the crosswind is the most critical one. That's the biggest one. It really deters teams from passing deep down the field. The game becomes much more condensed, so to speak, a lot of dink and dunk, a lot of ground game. And even those dink and dunk passes, 3-4 yards, it acts as a ground game. It keeps the clock ticking. So the crosswind is the biggest factor.
And I'm not sure what we'll have in the weather forecast tonight when Miami goes on the road to Cincinnati. As always, Thursday Night Football brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out their website, www.americangaming.org, and, of course, follow them on Twitter, at Ammer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G-A-S-S-N, for all sorts of updates specifically surrounding their ongoing legalization efforts. The mission of the American Gaming Association to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policy, and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. You can sign up for updates at americangaming.org/about/contact. And, of course, they put on the Global Gaming Expo out here. I had a chance to speak on a panel Wednesday afternoon with some of the esteemed colleagues in the odds-making industry, a fascinating dialogue about where the industry is going, how long it may take to get there. And while it could be to the chagrin of our listeners, probably about 3 to 5 years out before you're able to, at minimum, have some legalization efforts take place there. And Payne, as you mentioned, some great content on the site, a full study and press release from the AGA about the illegal market being absolutely ripe for manipulation. Bengals, Dolphins, though, we mentioned, looking at Cincinnati, a 7.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Total in this game, 45. Cincinnati, a pretty depressing performance. Maybe depressing, not the right word, against Denver, but they had high expectations, 3.5-point favorites. Never really outside the number in what was one of the more vaunted home field advantages. Vontaze Burfict should be back in the fold. But for as disappointing as Cincinnati was in a loss, you can make the case that Miami was that disappointing in a win against the much maligned Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, short week. I think when you look at some of the coaching edges, this may be the first time this ever comes out of my mouth, but I think Marvin Lewis gets a small coaching edge here. One thing I can tell you, and I've said this numerous times, when it comes to rookie head coaches and really any new job or new work role in general, you don't know what you don't know. And suddenly, you know, are we practicing at this time? Are team meetings at this time? Are padded practices on Wednesday or Thursday? No contact walkthroughs later in the week. What time are we leaving for road trips? You truly don't know what works best for a specific group until you know. And I think this short week kind of becomes, you know, a little hurdle for Adam Gase. So I think that's kind of the first thing. I know we talked about the Bengals. They didn't look that impressive last week. But one thing that impressed me a little bit was they got the ground game going again. And we talked about this the first 2 weeks. Hugh Jackson not there, new offensive coordinator. They chucked the ball around the park. 72% of their plays were passes. They kind of got away from the ground game. They reestablished it last week. And I think on a short week, that needs to be the game plan you implement against the Dolphins, who have no depth on defense, who cannot stop the run. I know Ndamukong Suh is there, but he's eating up every double team known to man, and nobody else is beating their man on that defensive line one-on-one. So I think you're going to see a lot of ground and pound from the Bengals, and I think they'll be able to do it successfully.
And when you look at this game, we saw it open at 7, start to tick up into the dead zone. Total hasn't done a whole lot at 45. What do we think we're going to see from the Dolphins offense? I know you've had a great read and pulse on what they were going to do week in, week out. You mentioned their ability to run the football a little bit. You know, what are your thoughts through at least 3 weeks of what you've seen from Ryan Tannehill? Clearly Jarvis Landry emerging as a top-tier receiver, but maybe not getting the quarterback play he needs to elevate into that A.J. Green-type class.
You know, many asked me about the Dolphins before the season. Were they going to be a surprise? Everyone is optimistic about Gase. There's just not a ton of talent here. There's zero depth. I know this is a passing league, but it's tough to be good when you can't control the game. And to control the game, you have to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to stop the run. Right now, you look at this Dolphins team, you look at Ryan Tannehill, he's clearly not the problem, but he's also not a solution either. And so for Tannehill to kind of take this team to the next level, take them to the playoffs further, whatever the aspirations are, he's got to have support in the run game. He's got to have a good defense. He's got to have a team that can run the ball. He's a guy that right now, you know, he's in that 12 to 18 range of quarterbacks. He does not have a feel for the position. It's not natural to him. He doesn't have awareness, doesn't have pocket presence. He runs himself into a lot of sacks, into a lot of pressures. So none of those things come natural to him. So if you're going to expect him to throw the ball 40 times a game, it's just not going to work. And Adam Gase has kind of come out and said this week, you know, I'm a little pass happy. So again, doesn't know what he doesn't know. I think you'll see a little more ground game from them. They'll need it. They're not quite sure who their running back's going to be. It's kind of a committee thing this week. So that's going to be the key. Can you take some pressure off Tannehill? Obviously, their wide receivers are the best part of this team. Devontae Parker, when healthy, He looks pretty decent. Jarvis Landry is a nice slot guy. He needs to find the end zone a little bit more. Did so last week. But for me, this thing, when you talk about the Dolphins, and I don't know why they do it, but they do. They play to the level of their competition. Have for years. They play better on the road for whatever reason. So we've seen them go to Seattle, dogfight there. They come home. They play like absolute crap against Cleveland. Very fortunate to get that win. They seem to play to the level of their competition. So from that perspective, this line seems a little high. But this is a Cincinnati team that also needs this game like blood. You simply cannot lose it. For me, I don't really have anything on this game. But I think if you're looking at, you know, a teaser this week, getting Cincinnati down through those key numbers of 7-3 is probably the way I look, whether I pair it with something like the Jets getting them back up through the 3 or the 7, or the 49ers getting them back up through the 3 and the 7. Maybe those are options.
And we broke down, obviously, this game in greater detail, covered 7 other marquee matchups on the board. No, we didn't have the chance to hit on everything, but were there a particular game or matchup that you think's worth just offering up a quick tidbit for our listeners before we part ways for the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, we actually haven't bet a ton this week already. I can tell you that right now. It's going to be a small board for us. But I think when you look at the Jets, this is kind of their spot, their game here. There are some threes out there at a few random places. But I think, you know, the Jets make a lot of sense at this point in the week.
Should be an interesting week for the NFL. Teams starting to show their true colors, fight for playoff positioning as early and ridiculous as that sounds. But every game means something. And, of course, we'll get the weekend started tonight with Miami-Cincinnati. The nice breakfast treat for those on the East Coast. You can lounge around, eat your brunch at 9:30 to take in Indianapolis and Jacksonville. Those of us out west have to be up a little bit earlier. But some great games in the afternoon to what I think should be one of the better Sunday night football games we'll see in the early season. And, of course, Monday night, a great game between the Giants and Minnesota, which you'll get a full in-depth breakdown right here on Bet the Board Pod, Monday podcast edition. For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. Dave Mason, who joined us earlier, follow his great work on Twitter as well, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And, of course, the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod, bettheboardpodcast.com, the home for the great information you're going to get each and every week. Sign up, SoundCloud, iTunes, and, of course, our weekly newsletter so you can be the first to listen to the podcast as soon as it goes live. And since I'm out of breath and plugged 97 things, this is where I bid everyone a fond farewell. Best of luck this weekend, folks, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.